Pure Dog Talk is the voice of purebred dogs. We talk to the legends of the sport and give you the tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I'm your host, Laura Reeves, and I have a super special guest today. Dr. Katrina Maley is the Associate Dean of Research at the Washington State University College of Veterinary Medicine. And she is the person who discovered, I believe I'm right on this, Dr. Maley, you can correct me if I'm wrong, the gene mutation that is the MDR1 gene in mostly herding dogs. Is that correct?
Yes, certainly did.
Excellent. So, Dr. Maley, tell us a little bit about your time. Give us the 411, we call it. You know, your time at WSU and what got you kind of looking for this gene mutation even in the first place?
So my interest in pharmacology actually started a long time ago. I went to pharmacy school before I went to vet school. So I've had an interest in pharmacology for a long time. And then after finishing vet school, I went on to do an internship and residencies and PhD in pharmacology and internal medicine. And so I have a very unique expertise, a set of knowledge base and experiences that set me up very nicely for looking at ways to prevent adverse drug reactions in dogs.
That's your background. So I read in the WSU magazine and I read the article online and it was just fascinating to me. And listeners, there will be a link to that article so that you can get more information from Dr. Maley. But the idea that you were looking for that kind of drug interaction, specifically able to narrow it down to a gene, I find that fascinating. I completely geek out about that.
So the reason the MDR1 gene kind of popped out was actually very serendipitous. During my PhD, I was studying this protein called P-glycoprotein, and P-glycoprotein is the protein that the MDR1 gene codes for. And I was actually studying P-glycoprotein because it's fascinating that it causes chemotherapy drug resistance in cancer. So if you have tumor cells that express P-glycoprotein, those tumor cells become resistant to a variety of anti-cancer drugs. And that's what I was studying for my PhD.
Wow.
And while I was studying for my prelims, I came across a journal article from the Netherlands that described these mice that they had gene edited to get rid of the MDR1 gene. And these mice, they survived really well, which was surprising to the researchers. They reproduced. But one day they developed a mite infestation, and according to the protocol for the laboratory, they sprayed the room that housed the mice with ivermectin, which is an antiparasitic drug, to treat the mites. Well, the next day they found that a bunch of the mice were dead. And these researchers, instead of, you know, blaming the animal care people or whatever for overdosing or anything, they actually took a closer look and found that all of the mice that were missing the MDR1 gene were dead, but none of the other mice were dead.
Wow.
And so they did more research and they published the fact that the mice with the MDR1 gene knocked out had 100 times higher concentration of ivermectin in their brain than the normal mice did. And as a veterinarian, we've known since the 1980s that herding breed dogs are very sensitive to ivermectin.
Right.
In fact, veterinarians in the 1980s used to say white feet don't treat when it came to ivermectin because they recognized that it was herding breed dogs, mostly, that had this sensitivity.
Interesting.
Yeah. So the practicing veterinarians that owners take their dogs to, you don't have to be a researcher or have that training. Veterinarians are very good at observing these things. And so they noticed this breed sensitivity and they warned each other as veterinarians about it. So when I read about the mice, in my mind, it seemed, well, that's exactly what happens with these collies. And so we investigated that gene in collies. We started off with collies, and then we went on to Shelties and Australian Shepherds and, you know, a bunch of other herding breed dogs.
Right.
But that's how it started.
And that is fascinating. And I'm not going to ask you to get into the completely techno-geek details because it would go over my head and everybody else's. But I love that you were able to use the DNA and get down to identifying specifically to the point that you now have a swab that, now I don't have herding dogs, but I'd never even heard of this cheek swab to identify this particular gene mutation.
Yeah, and so we can use blood samples or cheek swabs. So, you know, we test a bunch of dogs, obviously, every week. We get samples sent in from veterinary clinics, and it's easier for them to use blood samples.
Mm-hmm.
And we also can test directly with the owners, and it's much easier for owners, obviously, to use the cheek swabs. So we've adapted our assay to either blood or cheek swab.
Okay. And so if I own an Australian Shepherd, for example, and I have a litter of puppies, can I test the whole litter before they go out? I mean, where is that testing protocol in that basis?
Yeah, we get a lot of litters. We get submissions from a lot of owners, breeders, whatever, that have litters. We want to make sure that we're not confusing the mother's milk, because there's DNA, obviously, in the mother's milk. So we usually test them when they're, 6 to 8 weeks old, where
right.
they can go for 2 to 4 hours without nursing, so that we don't have the mother's DNA in there. But yeah, we test a lot of puppies before they are sold.
And I think that is just, again, this is all brand new information to me. I love that. And are you finding that every single herding dog has this mutation, or that they don't, and people are able to actually breed away from it because of this research?
So it really depends on the breed. So 75% of collies actually have the mutation. So it would be wrong from a, you know, geneticist mm-hmm. kind of standpoint to not breed any of those dogs. The collie gene mm-hmm. pool would then
right.
be reduced to 25% of those dogs. And obviously all breeds, all purebred dogs have some genetic disease
mm-hmm.
links or whatever. And so we could introduce a more serious genetically related disease by reducing the collie gene pool. On the other hand, Shelties, only 10% of them have the mutation. So it wouldn't probably be nearly as detrimental
right.
to the Sheltie gene pool if you got rid of that 10%. So it really depends on what the percentage of the mutation is
in that breed.
In the breed population. Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. And is this, and again, I know these may sound like ridiculously stupid questions to you, but these are the kind of questions that pop into my mind. Is this a disease where both sire and dam have to be a carrier in order to pass it on? How is that expressed in the breeding pool?
Yeah, so if a dog has one copy of the gene, it would be called a dominant trait.
Okay.
If a dog has one copy of the gene, it will have drug sensitivity. If it has two copies of the mutant gene, it's going to have more severe drug sensitivity. But it's not a recessive gene. So a dog does
Got
not
it.
Have to have two mutant copies. It only has to have one mutant copy to have drug sensitivity.
Got it. That was where I was going and not having the right words for. Thank you.
That's
fabulous.
Hang tight, guys. Got a little bit of information for you. We'll be right back to the podcast in a minute.
All right, crew. Last month, I was filling you in on the Trupanion Breeder Support Program. And in case you missed it, this is a free program for breeders that lets us offer our buyers, our puppy buyers, a go-home day offer so that they can try out Trupanion and everybody has the peace of mind that that puppy is covered in case of any kind of an incident. But I was talking to Haran recently, and I didn't realize at the time that they actually have a breeding rider that is additional to the regular healthcare coverage that Trupanion offers our dogs. And so I wanted to bring Haran Greer from Trupanion back to tell us about it, because I was blown away. So welcome, Haran.
Thanks, Laura. Thanks for having me back. And I'm happy this came up in conversation.
Yeah, right? So tell us about it. This is pretty incredible to me.
Yeah, so I'll just start at the basics. You know, so if you join Trupanion, we just have one simple plan. It's 90% coverage for the unexpected illnesses, accidents, and injuries. And then from there, breeders can add a breeding rider coverage to make sure that they're protected from the unexpected things that can happen with breeding.
Okay, so what does that cover? What kind of things are you covering in your claims with the breeding rider?
So it's truly things that are unexpected. So anything that you can't plan for in advance is what Trupanion gives you peace of mind from, right? But with the breeding rider, you know, the most common claim that we see are for C-section.
Mm-hmm.
But as I was looking through, I was curious just to see what kind of claims we have been seeing in the past year. I was surprised that pyometra payouts have exceeded what we've paid out for C-section.
Wow.
So the claims paid ranged from the lowest one that we paid out was $1,740, and the highest one to date this year has been $5,500.
That's pretty incredible. So how much does a person pay to add that breeding rider to their regular insurance coverage?
So that rider has variables. You'll want to give us a call or go to our website. The factors are things like where you live, what breed you have, is it a male or female, how old are they, and then the deductible. And those right. deductible options is where, you know, the flexibility comes in mm-hmm. for your monthly payment. And those range from $0 to $1,000.
Okay, beautiful. So check it out, listeners, puredogtalk.com. You can find the Trupanion website. Just click that logo and it will take you in to get lots and lots of information about some stuff that I think not all of us always think about. So thank you, Haran. I really appreciate your time.
Thanks so much, Laura. I hope to be back on soon.
Okay, so then this really is, for a lot of these breeds, a major issue, and we know this. And I know within the purebred dog community, I've seen stories of dogs who actually died from this particular situation with the Ivomec. And one of the things I read in the article was that you had been working then as a follow-up on a protocol of different treatments for antiparasitics. Is that correct?
So that's more of a collaborative thing.
Okay.
You know, dermatologists do that. We work with oncologists to look at dose reductions or other drugs and using other drugs instead. But that is more of a collaborative thing with dermatologists, with oncologists.
Mm-hmm. And are you making good progress? Are you seeing success in that collaboration?
Yeah. So really, I'm just going to give the credit to the oncologists and the dermatologists. They have identified other treatments most of the time, or we've worked on dose reductions that will work for, you know, depending on which type of cancer and that type of thing.
Mm-hmm. And so for these herding dogs that can't be treated with ivermectin, there is an alternative treatment for them.
So, and I think I'm going to stop you there and say, depends on the dose.
Okay.
Okay, so ivermectin is used to prevent heartworms at a dose
right.
of about 6 micrograms per kilogram.
Mm-hmm.
So not that anybody has to worry about the units there, but just to give you an idea, the dose that we use for treating mange is about 300 micrograms per kilogram. So even if the dog has the mutation, the heartworm prevention dose is fine. The
okay.
mange dose definitely will cause a problem. But you can understand, we're talking 6 micrograms per kilogram once a month.
To 300.
Or 300 micrograms per kilogram.
Right. And I know one particular instance, it's in the back of my head, an Aussie that got into like sheep poop, I think maybe, you know, an animal that had been treated heavily at sheep dosage or goat dosage or something like that with ivermectin, that the dog then ate that. And that was what gave the dog the problem.
Yeah. It's possible for a dog to eat enough feces if the sheep or the horse has been mm-hmm. wormed and they eat poop, you know, within the 24 to 48 hours.
Right.
What is more likely to happen is that the dog will ingest the drool that comes out, you know, the really concentrated drool that comes out, or get a hold of the tube of paste,
okay.
which is incredibly highly concentrated.
Right.
It's more likely to get toxicity that way than by eating the feces.
Okay. Very, very cool.
Because it's really diluted out. Yeah, and you'd have to eat a whole bunch.
Yeah.
Not that it's not possible.
Yeah, it's been known to happen.
But licking up a little drool, you're going to get a lot more than you will by eating a whole pile of poop.
Interesting. Okay, and did I also read in this article that you are finding other breeds that have this sensitivity as well, right? Not just like herding group breeds.
Yeah, so there have been some sight hounds like the Silken
right.
Windhound and the Long-Haired Whippet. And the thought is that perhaps when someone was looking to improve the hair coat of those breeds, that they introduced a Sheltie and...
Mm-hmm.
The Sheltie happened to be one that had the MDR1 mutation.
Interesting.
But we've also found it in very small number of boxers, which is odd.
Odd?
Just because they have no relation at all.
Right.
And so we don't know if the mutation occurred spontaneously in a boxer, in a different dog, you know?
Mm-hmm.
For the MDR1 mutation in herding breeds, it really, some very complex genetic work that was done by people that were at UC Davis, they were able to determine that the mutation probably originated in a literal herding dog.
Mm-hmm.
Before the collie breed was ever established or the Old English sheepdog breed was ever established, and that it was probably a dog that was really good at herding sheep and so became a very popular sire.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time that breeds were established, all herding breeds in England had this mutation present.
Interesting. And so then now you're specifically narrowing that to the British Isles. Do you not see it in, say, for example, some of the flock or the livestock guardian breeds or some of those kind of things from Europe or from Central Asia?
So what breeds are you talking about?
I would think livestock guardian breeds, think like maybe a Poolie or is a herding dog or a Commodore that's a working dog or a Beauceron or something.
Yeah,
right,
yeah.
Like that.
We have not identified it in those breeds.
Interesting. It's fascinating. Okay, so what are you looking at with your future research? What else are you hoping to be able to discover in relationship to this, in relationship to other genes that are like this, that are very specifically like nailed down, right?
We have lots of directions that we're going. One of the things that we're doing is we know a lot of drugs that are affected by the MDR1 mutation, but the veterinary pharmaceutical industry is introducing new drugs, you know, every year.
Mm-hmm.
And unlike what happens in humans, it's actually required by the FDA in humans to determine whether a drug is a substrate for P-glycoprotein. It's not required for veterinary medicine.
Huh.
So we want to fulfill that role. We're working on cell lines to be able to determine whether these new drugs are going to be affected by the MDR1 mutation or not. So that's a big part of what we're doing. Then I have some other people here at Washington State University in our what we call our program in individualized medicine.
Mm-hmm.
And they are looking at sighthounds. And sighthounds have a reputation for being sensitive to anesthetic drugs.
Yes.
And so my colleague is an anesthesiologist and is also a brilliant pharmacogenetics person. And so he is looking at mutations in drug metabolizing enzymes that would predispose the sighthounds to
wow.
these adverse drug reactions.
And now I have to know, where are we on that? Where are you guys? Because that is huge.
He is very close.
Wow.
That's Dr. Michael Court. Yeah, he is very close.
Fascinating. Very, very, very interesting. Okay. And so all of this is taking place in the research department of the College of Veterinary Medicine at WSU. And I saw in the material that this is something that people can actually donate to that research. Is that correct? To kind of move that forward?
Yes, absolutely. So I know that most of your listeners are dog owners, but they might have some cats as well.
And so cats we also and horses cat and research. All kinds of stuff.
Yeah, so we actually have identified a mutation in the MDR1 gene in cats, and my colleague is also working on, you know, cats are very sensitive to nonsteroidal anti-inflammatory drugs,
mm-hmm.
painkillers, and we think that he has identified the gene that makes them that way.
Wow.
So we have a lot of research going on, and so we've actually had even some large donations from people that are interested either in cats or herding breed dogs or sighthounds. So yes. It's a donation that could be just to the individualized medicine program, or it could be specifically for cats or for sighthounds or for herding breed dogs.
Right. All right. Well, I will make sure that there is a link to your website there so that folks that want to support that research can do that. And I really, really, really appreciate your time. This has been fascinating. And again, I don't come from herding dogs, so some of this may be more common knowledge, but I pay attention, and I've not seen a whole lot of this, so this is excellent to get out into the world of purebred dog owners.
Well, and the other thing that I think I would like for your readers to do would be think about their own breed, even if it's not a sighthound or
right.
a herding breed dog, and if there are very well-defined incidents of adverse drug reactions that seem to be common among that breed, we would be very interested in working on trying to find out a gene that would explain that particular adverse drug reaction.
Wow. So there you go. Shout out. National Breed Clubs. Listen up. These folks want to work with you. That is so cool. I wish you could find something for epilepsy. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
I know.
Our specialty is pharmacogenetics. And so, yeah, we would have to leave that to the neurology experts. But yeah.
I know. All right. Well, Dr. Maley, thank you so very much. I know you are a super, super, super busy person, and I am going to let you get back to that. But I, again, thank you. I appreciate your time.
Thank you. I enjoyed chatting with you.
As always, if you have any questions or input, we'd love to hear from you. The show notes and links to resources on today's topic are available at puredogtalk.com. Drop us a note in the comments or email to laura@puredogtalk.com. Remember, guys, this podcast is for you. So if you want to know something, give me a holler. We'll do a podcast for you. If you wouldn't mind, you could help me out here. Take a couple minutes to visit iTunes and give us a review. The Dog Show Superintendents Association is a proud supporter of Pure Dog Talk. Our dog show superintendents are the hardworking people who make the dog show function. They are advocates for education and mentorship in the purebred dog fancy. So stop by the super's desk at your next show. Tell them how much you love Pure Dog Talk and give them a shout out for their support. That's all for today. Thank you for joining us on Pure Dog Talk.